Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome aboard, everybody. Welcome aboard, and I am thrilled that you are here today. Okay, is the chat room overloaded? Plenty of good seats still available, but get them quick, as I am fuming. I'm all bent out of shape today, so I got to calm myself down. I got to listen to David Leisure, who tells me to focus, because it's just unbelievable how some people try to take advantage of a situation for the sake of making themselves look good. Unless I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, I will apologize. So I won't mention any names, so I don't really have to apologize. Okay, but anyway, I'll tell you about that. All right, throw this question out. Why would a show host ask a question about Josh Tomlin on a segment that was geared to the Tampa Rays team report? Team report segment on Tampa Bay, first question was Josh Tomlin. Okay, and he knew who Josh Tomlin was and what team he was on. Why would a show host do that? Anybody have any anybody have any ideas? Okay, so anyway, we'll see about that. As Brooks Santello, first-time listener to the program, nice to have you with us, Brooks. And today we're dedicating this podcast, or at least a good portion of it, to my dear friends Jay Johnson and Brian Wiley over at Fantasy Baseball Universe, who gave me a little competition in a discussion yesterday about punting saves. We're not punting saves, and I got a lot to talk about there, and we'll get to that in just a minute. I just want to go over some of the headlines. We'll keep it to a minimum, but of course, with the Evani Gallardo thing, I was beginning to think it might have been buyer's remorse or something like that. Ian Desmond still not signed, and of course, you know, when you think about it, Elvis Andrus is getting 8 years and $120 million. And Ian Desmond is every bit of Elvis Andrus. Now, you know, the other thing about him signing with Colorado, once it's determined that Jose Reyes will get suspended without pay, Colorado saves a chunk of money, okay? So I'm sure Desmond, that's where Desmond is going. You could bet your bippy on that one. Mike Stanton, better known as Giancarlo Stanton, using a new bat to relieve a lot of the pressure on his hands. Does that scare you at all? He broke his hamate bone. Some people told me that his hamate recovery was just a little longer than expected. So I'm wondering if Stanton is not 100%. And now using a bat with a special handle, so it's pretty interesting. I wonder a little bit. I'm going to really watch Stanton in the exhibition season because I'm a little concerned now with that piece of information that came out. Victor Martinez, for those of you who may be drafting V-Mart, he will eventually get some eligibility at first base. He's not a good first baseman. He's only really good at catcher. Or, I mean, maybe a little better, but not that he may be playing some first. And, of course, Hamilton over on Cincinnati, they're going to try him at leadoff. He has failed before, but, you know, sometimes it's going to take Hamilton – he's a great athlete. You know that there are some who consider Billy Hamilton as the best defensive center fielder, or at least one of the best in the National League. Yeah, he's good. You know, he should be getting it. If he gets on base, forget about it. Yeah, by the way, with Stanton and all these picks, you know, everybody wants to say, you know, Stanton was the 76th pick in the draft in 2007. Go back and take a look at that draft. Quite a few players in that draft. So it's pretty interesting. Joey Votto comes up with a good one. Did you see the interview with Joey Votto? He says when he was asked what he's been doing in the offseason, he's been resting a lot, he says. And he's also, to stay in shape, he's doing a lot of walking. You think that was a dig to the Cincinnati sports fans and the writers of all the criticism that he takes too many walks? Oh, yeah, I'm doing a lot of walking, and a lot of resting. All right, so that's pretty interesting on Joey Votto. The Yankees, speaking of resting, have taken the position. Some doctor told them that they should start spring training At 11 o'clock in the morning instead of the early hours, it's better for their athletes. So, you know, when you're thinking of going out real early in the morning, may not be the thing to do. So we'll just see if that makes any difference. You know, I'm pushing Manny Machado. A lot of people are criticizing me, but I take a look at Machado and I see the only player to hit 35 home runs and steal 20 bases. That's it, Manny Machado. I mean, how could you not take him fourth in your draft? And a player I'm looking at is Desmond Jennings, who will, a lot of, you know, Desmond Jennings has only played 28 games since August 28th, 2014. Unbelievable that that's the situation there. We remember when this 29 years old, remember when Desmond Jennings came up, we thought this guy was going to be the end-all, but his knee has been the end-all of Desmond Jennings. So pretty interesting to see how that works out with Jennings. Will he come alive? And I got to tell you, I did a Tampa Bay report this morning, and I'll just throw out the question again. Why would the host in a Tampa Bay report ask me a question about Josh Tomlin? Knowing, I give the guy credit, I know he knows Josh Tomlin's not on Tampa. Is there any reason that you can tell me so I could get the anger down why why he would ask me about Josh Tomlin in a Tampa Bay exclusive team report segment? So there you go. All right, once I get that out of the way, that's out of the way. All right, don't forget, head over to LennyMelnickFantasySports.com. Good article up about this kid Goodell from Philadelphia. Who's Goodell? I don't mean Eddie Goodell. Tyler Goodell, who was the first pick taken in the Rule 5 draft. I got to tell you something. Watch this kid, okay? Pay attention. In the NFBC drafts, Tyler Goodell is a pick. Okay, he's going to steal bases, he's going to hit home runs, he's going to play because they have to keep him. So don't forget Tyler Goodell. I think he could be, yeah, the voto line. David, that voto line was absolutely fantastic. Brooks says he likes Desmond more than Andrus. Elvis is a safer player because his defense, though most likely better. Let me tell you something, Brooks. Desmond's defense is not that bad. He makes a lot of errors. But one of the reasons he makes a lot of errors is because he gets to a lot of balls. He's got a great throwing arm. He's got great range. He makes errors because he gets to, you know, it's the range. People don't get it. You know, the Mets signed Astrobel Cabrera, and he was rated. He had one of the best. He didn't make any errors, right? Like, what, 8 errors all year? He didn't get to any balls. So take a look at how many errors Astrobel Cabrera made. And do you think he's any good? I don't think so. As we welcome Jason into the room, we are packed with Brooks, the new fella. Nice to have you with us, Donkey Teeth, Eric. And here, I'll get back to Eric in a second. Greg and Jet 9 and Mark and Matt and Michael and the Natural and Chata, the great Chata from Parts Unknown, and then David Leisure and the great Jerry Colvin. But I got to tell Jerry, I got it this morning from the same guy you got it yesterday. Here's the deal. Let's hear it as good news. Eric LaMarca, and I think most of us know that Eric's dad's had some health problems the last couple of months. He's coming home, so let's give a real big sigh of relief to Eric and his dad, who's a tough son of a gun. All right, now let's get to the program. Let's talk about punting saves now. First of all, the first thing I want to clarify, I have been in this business now for 23 years. This is my 23rd year of broadcasting. I've been playing fantasy baseball for longer than that. And I've gotten a reputation that Lenny Melnick does not pay for saves. And I definitely talk about that, and I have no problem saying Lenny Melnick does not, pay attention now, pay for saves. Okay, I'll get to that in a minute. I don't pay for saves. As a matter of fact, in Tout Wars, is it last year or 2 years ago, somebody threw out Craig Kimbrell, I threw out Craig Kimbrell. Yeah, that's it. I have a reputation in the auction format of throwing out the top closers. Everybody knows I'm going to do it, and I do it. I mean, how does it hurt me? It just gets money out. So I threw out Craig Kimbrell, and the room was silent. Silent. Absolutely silent. Nobody went. Oh, here it goes, going once. Melnick drafted a close. Of course, it was a setup, and I really didn't get him. But that's how much the reputation of Craig Kimbrell, of me not drafting a closer, has gone into it. So that's what I'm famous for, not drafting a closer. But let me get into it right now. In the snake draft, I have never said not to draft a closer in the snake draft, right? It doesn't make any sense not to. But when you draft a closer, let's just first of all take the position that, and even though my friend Jay Johnson disagrees and says, that you draft that closers are not one-dimensional. And, yeah, of course, they can help you. Chapman's going to help you in strikeouts in comparison to the other closers drafted, not in comparison to drafting a decent starting pitcher. So he will help you in strikeouts. He will help you in whip with 60 or 70 innings. The truth is that if you draft two closers, you'll get this, and you can get like 120 innings of a great ERA and a great WHIP. Yeah, that's going to help you. There's no question about it. It's going to help you. But if it's going to help you. But the problem with drafting closers in the snake draft, even though it's very good to get those guys, you get the saves, you get the whole thing. So it's not the fact that you're drafting them that I have a problem with. I like closers. They're good. But in the snake draft, it's because there's no dollar value, you take a closer in, the 7th, 8th, 9th round. That, to me, is foolish, not because the closer may not be worth it, because the players that you're passing up are worth it even more. And that's why in the snake draft, I say, yeah, you can draft a closer, but don't draft a closer in the 7th inning. Wait a little bit. I mean, you draft a closer in the 7th round, as in the FSTA draft. Zach Britton was drafted in the 7th, Rosenthal in the, and they passed up guys like Prince Fielder, Cole Hamels, Sinshu Chu, Lucas Duda with his 30 home runs, Brian McCann, the 25 home runs from a catcher. You can't do that. You're passing up these guys in exchange for Zach Britton or Trevor Rosenthal, and you got to pass up even better players to get the Chapmans and the Kimbrels and the elite pitchers. It doesn't make sense from that point of view. I take the position in the snake draft that all I want to do is finish in the middle of the pack in saves. And I can do that by paying attention. And towards the end of the draft, when you pass up players at the end of the draft, and you're passing up Jesse Hahn and Jason Hamels and Aoki, who cares about those players? You wait and see. The round you draft a closer in is determined by what players are left. The moment you discover, and it comes up pretty soon, it doesn't come up in the last couple of rounds. The moment that you see that the players that you're passing up really don't have an impact on your team, that's when you go for the impact save guy that's going to give you a couple of points and saves. You understand that? You're passing up impact players who could help you in more than one category in exchange for a good closer. And it's not worth it. It's absolutely not worth it, because the value of a closer is the saves. I don't care how good his ERA and WHIP is. ERA and WHIP are a function of the entire pitching staff. It'll help you. No question about it, but you get a couple of clinker pitchers in, and there goes the value of your saves in ERA and WHIP. There goes the value of your closers, right down the toilet. So wait a little bit, wait till you take a look, and I don't say exactly what round, but I'm going to tell you, it's not the 7th, it's not the 8th, it's not the 9th. And maybe you could even pick up three closers. I mean, towards the end of the draft, you can pick up closers. You can pick up Brad Ziegler. You could probably pick up Sean Doolittle. I mean, David Hernandez has got a good shot to be a closer. Jeremy Jeffers, yeah. Carter Capps could be. You got to take a shot at some of these guys. And if you can come up with three, you have a very good opportunity You have a very good opportunity to get two or three closes and give you some points. Absolutely, give you. And I'm telling you, I'm going to get to the auction format in just a minute. All right, what is the price barrier? All right, David Leisure wants to know how I strategize punting saves in auctions, and he wants to know what my price barrier is. You will be shocked to hear my price barrier. All right, yes, and of course, Brooks is right. If you have a great closer but the team is bad, you know, he gets four or less save chances. Maybe he gets four. Bobby Thigpen, Chicago White Sox, was on a last place team when he set the record for saves years ago. I used to draft guys like Brian Harvey on a bad Angel team. I used to draft guys like Mike Fetters on a bad Milwaukee team, a guy like Dwayne Ward on a mediocre Toronto team. The truth of the matter is, even if you're drafting a Philly closer or an Atlanta closer this year, God knows we don't even know who they are yet, Vizcaino probably, and David Hernandez with Mujica and Andrew Bailey and Ernesto Freire, who knows who'll be the closer there. But what happens is that when these teams win games, they usually win them by close margins. When you have an elite team, a really good team like Toronto or teams that are scoring a lot of runs, you don't get the save. So it does kind of even out a little bit. I mean, if the Phillies win 60 games and lose 100, of their 60 games, there's a pretty good chance that 30 or 40 of them are going to be save opportunities. So, Brooks, even though that sounds like it could be right, the truth is that you'll get quite a few saves from even the teams that lose 100 games, because they still got to win 60. Chances are they're not gonna demolish a team, and they'll all be save opportunities rather than go on Toronto, a team with a run differential astounding, and they may not get as many opportunities. So let's not fall for that kind of stuff and think that's the truth, okay? There's a lot of closers who are on some pretty mediocre and crappy teams. Don't let that distract you, okay? So that's my theory on the snake draft. It's pretty simple. I'm waiting until I take a look at the unpicked players pool, look at my team, and I can safely say nobody is in the unpicked players pool who's going to have any kind of a real impact. You know, you may need a second baseman, you may need an outfielder, but that's just filling positions. You look and see if there's anybody that can impact your team. A couple of years ago, I was in that situation. I had some extra money in the auction format, and I got severe, and it happened to me the other year too. And I got criticized because I looked and I found out that there was only one player who could really make an impact on my team in both stolen bases and home runs. And I decided to go $26 in a 260 format. And I'll tell you the player's name, but don't start throwing stuff at me. His name was Cameron Maben, because he's the only one who could have had an impact on my team. Put me right over my, where I wanted my benchmarks and stolen bases and home runs. Same thing last year when I drafted Gene Segura. I wanted those 25 stolen bases meant the world to me in the draft. And, yeah, I overpaid for them. All right? But if there's nobody left who could really make an impact on your team, that's when you start drafting closers. And you're not going to get the best, and you're going to get some risky ones, and it may be that you're not going to do well in the save category, but ultimately you'll walk out there with a better team. Now, the auction format, and here's where I will say, without a doubt, it's stupid. That's right. I'll say it's stupid to buy closers and spend money on closers. It is, I'll repeat, that's capital S-T-U-P-O-D, stupid, okay? That's how smart I am, all right? Stupid. But the truth is, man, is that unlike in the snake draft where you're just passing, when you're passing up players, when you start spending money, you're losing out, man. You're losing out on some big players. Same kind of thing. You're losing out on better players. You're losing out on the opportunity to draft some big-time players. And I have surveyed almost every team in the auction format, and I have looked at every team who drafted closers, and I took those closers off, and I used the money that they spent to either get a stud starting pitcher or an offensive guy, or maybe two offensive guy improvements, and they've always had a better team. Now, I admit, I've won labor three times. I've won Tout Wars, I think once, maybe twice, I don't remember, but certainly once. It was once. So that's pretty good. I got four championships, and I haven't played in labor, all the time. As a matter of fact, I won it 18 years apart. But I never drafted closers. So it can be done. I've showed you four times where it could be done. My partner Irwin Zwilling and I, once we got out of the era of Dwayne Ward, Mike Fetters, and Brian Harvey, we stopped drafting closers. All right, that was it. All right, no more closers for us. And here's what happens when you're drafting a closer. Now, first of all, in both the snake draft and the auction format, let's be honest. How many times have you come out of the draft being, that's right, we don't draft catchers either, all right? We don't draft closers, we only draft four players. Okay, so here's the deal. How many times have you come out of a 5x5 format and said to yourself that you're strong in every category, okay? How many times have you come out of a, say, 5x5 format and discovered that you were weak in a category, okay? I would say you've discovered you're weak in a category many more times than you would say that you were strong in every category. So I take the position, if you're going to be weak in a category, even if you're trying not to, why don't you go into the draft saying, all right, I'm going to be weak in saves. I'm going to be weak in saves, and I'm going to know that in the draft, so I'm going to load up. And I'm not going to spend a lot of money in the auction format because I know I'm going to be weak in a category. So I know that if I don't spend money on a closer, I have a real good chance of being strong in 9 out of 10 categories. That's right. I have a good chance. I may even be only strong in 8 categories, may only 7, but you should be strong in a lot of categories. Let's put it that way. And I'll tell you why. Here's what happens. You take a look at the auction format anywhere you go. I don't care what it is. You're probably, one closer doesn't do a blessed thing for you. One, 2 points, one closer does nothing. Either you're going to do it or you're not. So you're going to buy two closers, and let's take the position that you're going to spend $25 for two closers, okay? $25, maybe $30. You want, and if you dare say that you're getting Kimbrel and Chapman and, oh, my God, and all these guys, you're out of your mind to think you're going to spend $40. You're going to spend $20 on one. You're going to spend $15 on another, $35. Now, you tell me, okay? You want to talk about ERA? You want to talk about WHIP? You want to talk about, you got elite closers, man. You got, I got Chapman. I'm strong in strikeouts. I got this guy. I got Kenley Jansen. Chapman, I'm going to, strikeouts. It's going to cost you $40 to get Jansen and Chapman. And you'll get strikeouts, okay? But you take that $40 and add it to a $5 pitcher, a starting pitcher, you're going to pay $5. Let's say you got a couple of good starters. You got a couple of good starters. You got Zach Greinke. You got Adam Wainwright. And you wanted one big starter. But you only got a couple of $5 guys because you really couldn't afford it. Let's say you take that $35 that you're going to spend on the two closers and you add it to the $5 starting pitcher. You got Clayton Kershaw. Now, are you better off in strikeouts? Are you better off in ERA? Are you better off in WHIP with Clayton Kershaw or Kenley Jansen and Aroldis Chapman? I mean, come on, people. Now, if you want to take the position that you want to be strong in offense, you take that $45, you take that $30, and you add it to a $5 player, You got Paul Goldschmidt, man. You know what the difference is between Paul Goldschmidt and a $5 player? That's tons of points, many more points that you're going to get than drafting two stupid closers who may lose their job. And with what's going on in Major League Baseball, do you know that opening day last year, take a look at all the closers, opening day last year, and what you do is take a look at the closers penciled in as the closers this year, 16 new closers this year, right? 16 new closers this year than there were last year opening day. 16. There's only 30 freaking teams. 16 of them. 16 closers are new. Okay, 16 closers are new. So that tells you the story. And I've talked about this everywhere. I'll say it for the final time. The effector is coming into play in Major League Baseball. Now, remember, Lenny Melnick, FantasySports.com, in the water cooler, I have a section that asks for questions or comments, okay? Any questions, any comments about anything. I'd like you to comment on this podcast. I'd like you to take into consideration what I'm saying about saves. I'd like you to take into consideration what I'm saying about the effector. A lot of people are going to disagree. It's going to come a time that in the seventh inning with the game on the line, you've heard this before, I'll say it again, I believe in it. I didn't even think about it. Andrea thought about this 4 years ago, that you bring in Aroldis Chapman in the seventh inning with the game on the line. If you don't and the game gets out of hand in the seventh inning, Aroldis Chapman might as well go home, okay? So you bring Chapman in, but then if you take a look at all the teams, then you bring in another guy who's got closer experience, a former closer, and you still has something that effector. I'm using it, baby, because, don't say that, Chata, because that may take years. So I think, look, it's going to happen. Here's the question. What's going to happen first, the effector or what Chata says? You never know. But the point is this, okay? It's going to be, especially if you guys are in dynasty leagues, that we're not going to be able to tell how many saves, we're not going to even project the amount of saves by the big guys, because the big guys will start to come in the seventh inning or the eighth inning with the game on the line. And take a look at, look, here's what the Yankees did. They got Betances who can close. They got Miller who can close. They got Chapman. One guy goes in to close. Even Atlanta, the Atlanta Braves, they got Vizcaino. Bring him in the seventh inning. You got Jason Grilli behind him. You got Jimmy Johnson. You got take a look at the roster. I'm not going to bore you. Go to a depth chart and take a look at every roster. You will find 10 out of 30 teams right now have at least one or two in the bullpen outside of the regular closer who have had experience closing. So the save category is going to get even more freaked out because we're going to be losing saves. Let's say Chapman comes in the seventh inning, eight or nine. That's eight saves that he may have had. It's going to go to somebody else. Not because he's not the best pitcher, but because he is the best pitcher. That's what it is. He is the best pitcher. And it makes no sense not to bring in your best pitcher with the game on the line in the seventh inning or the eighth inning or maybe even the sixth inning. I mean, you know, it depends on how the game is going, but that's my feeling on closers. Once again, to sum it up, I thank Jay Johnson and Brian Wiley for giving me a hard time. Listen, you know, what I'm saying here, I've been preaching this for years. This is nothing new. And I respect those who disagree with me, but this is what the beauty of baseball. We have, you know, you heard the Terry Cashman song, Willie Mickey and the Duke. I grew up in New York in the 50s with Willie Mickey and the Duke, and we used to have gang fights. Who was better? The Dodger fans, the Giant fans, the Yankee fans would all fight for their guy. I'm saying this about saves. You may think I'm a freaking moron, and if you do, go to the website, Lenny Melnick, FantasySports.com. Make your comments in the water cooler. You'll see where to put them, And just, I'm really interested to see what you all have to say about this, because you guys are coming in. Look at you guys. Unbelievable. Must have about 30 people in the chat room. And I swear to goodness, I love you all, man. You have pumped me up once again. So I thank you all. Have a great day. Go to the beach with Michael Johnson, because that's where he'll be. All right? And I'll be figuring out how to stop talking about the effector. And maybe before I do that, maybe even I can get the other thing that Chad'll suggesting. Thanks, everybody.